After more than a year of the pandemic, we are hearing more about the return of live music festivals this summer and into the fall here in Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley. Barry Corder covers this scene as a reporter for the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Barry, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Live music is springing back to life all around us here in the Chattanooga area and this corner of the Southeast.
All over. And I've got a bunch of schedules pulled up on my computer so I can talk with some actual information. And man, the middle of September, beginning and middle of September is going to be crazy. If depending on where you want to be, you can find something. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
And on the way to September, I'm just thinking the next few weeks. I'm thinking the next few months. I'm thinking about, for example, Nightfall. I'm thinking about Riverfront Nights.
Absolutely. Yeah, I keep pointing to fall, and I keep forgetting about the fact that not only that, the Bonnaroo Farm has started having events there. Nightfall will start next month. Riverfront Nights will get started about then. So, yeah, there's plenty. And the festival at the end of this month, I guess, down at Cherokee Farms Forward Fest. That's a great one. That's a great location if people have never been. It's a beautiful setting. Perfect for festivals like this.
How are these events planning to handle whatever protocols may still be in place or adjust? Because it seems every day there's a new adjustment now.
That's exactly right. It remains to be seen. That's a question that I ask all of the organizers, of course, whenever I talk to them. And Bonnaroo, for example, in Manchester, an hour from here, is sold out at 80,000 tickets. Moon River plans to be 11,000 tickets. Nightfall, they can't really limit because it's a free open space. So I think her intention is, like everybody, is to just hope that people are careful and make good decisions and have gotten vaccinated. That has been the key that seems to have loosened everything up. But you still don't know if the guy next to you has been vaccinated or not. So it's going to be interesting. We've been talking about it for a year. You know, shoulder to shoulder with people was always kind of odd if you were at all germophobic. Now people will be more aware, I would think. Then you throw in public bathrooms and all those sorts of things. So I honestly don't know. I plan to go to a lot of these events, especially in the fall. It's a game day decision. That's the only way I know how to put it. Legally, technically, what I'm hearing is most of them are saying you're on your own. You can't hold us responsible. We'll probably be seeing signage to that effect and verbiage on flyers and tickets and some of that sort of thing. It's still uncharted. Fluid. I keep hearing words like fluid and game day and we'll see and don't know. But the plan is to open up and have these events.
And as fluid as these events are, as we plan to open up and stage them, what sense do you have that any of these events have to be make or break because of the past year, how brutal that was for the music industry, despite any infusions of money that might be coming from Washington, D.C. or Nashville or wherever?
I would say huge. I mean, they're all, for the most part, hand to mouth. A bad rain year can kill one. We saw it happen in Birmingham. We saw it happen in Atlanta with some of their earlier festivals and series. A really bad weather year just killed it. So that can still happen. You've got some of the bigger ones, the Bonnaroos, the Lollapaloosas. You know, they have sort of a rainy day fund that they try to build in, but one or two bad years can kill them. Burning Man just announced it's not going to happen for the second year in a row. That's a huge financial hit to the area. Part of the reason I know that they are so insistent on happening this year is just the question that you ask. They can't survive another year without it. In a lot of cases, they had contracts signed for 2020, and a lot of those acts have kept the door open. You know, they tried to make it work even through a postponement after a postponement. A lot of them thought they could go this summer and then move to the fall. They can't just keep putting them off, especially now that other places are starting to book acts. So they got to get out and work the bands have been shut down for as long as the festivals have. So everybody's anxious to get back out and get paid.
I think about that a lot when I think of Riverfront Nights and Riverbend, which was already in the process of retooling before the pandemic hit, or beyond concert series, Songbirds.
Yeah, Songbirds, the museum, everything as we know it is gone. It's gone, gone, gone. I hope everyone understands that. It's confusing to a lot of people. The foundation is coming back and we'll be having live shows in the former museum space. So the great news is the foundation was doing terrific work with its Guitars for Kids program. Thousands of kids have already benefited. On a personal note, the big giant neon sign above the building was done by my sister's company. It doesn't have to go away. It's a beautiful sign. As I've joked, it's too big to fit in my basement, so it needed to stay where it was.
And if the choo-choo sign can stay where it is, then that sign can stay there.
Yeah, that will still work. The downstairs space, Brian Joyce, who people will know from WGOW, is going to be running a bar. That's the other thing to make clear. Really two spaces divided by a rolling door. He'll have the front space, the smaller space, and it will be a bar. And then the back space where the stage used to be will probably not have live music. It will probably be a restaurant. I would feel pretty certain about that.
Circling back to everything that is lined up for the fall, there is Bonnaroo, there is Moon River, and on and on and on.
And Riverbend. Riverbend will be in October. As you pointed out, they were in the process of retooling. Probably be 3 days. It'll probably be three stages. Very small. The barge was already gone, so it's not going to be the 35 to 55,000 people in that range. Probably be more like, you know, a city festival or a Riverfront Nights, probably for three nights type of thing. Maybe bigger, but similar. The Moon River, what's interesting is Bonnaroo is September 2nd, that first week, Labor Day weekend, that week. And then the next week is Moon River here at Coolidge Park. And then a month later will be Riverbend. I just got an email. Pitchfork in Chicago is that same weekend as Moon River. I think Railbirds is in Lexington is real close. That's why I say it. They're all right on top of each other. And I was talking with Drew Holcomb, the founder, co-founder of Moon River the other day. And I hadn't heard this before, but he said the no compete radius clause that a lot of these festivals have had in the past, there seems to be a gentleman's agreement that that's out the window this year. That's a clause that if you book to sign, play Bonnaroo or Moon River, you can't play anywhere within a couple hundred miles on depending 4 to 6 weeks on either side. So that's why you're seeing a lot of the same artists on many lineups, even if they're close to each other. As he said, everybody's in the same boat. Everybody needs to be successful. Everybody wants everybody to be successful. So, you know, then the question becomes two of them. And I hadn't thought about this. Are there enough people with enough money to support all of these in such a condensed time frame? And then what might it do to the venues, the individual venues? You know, if you've got 100 acts on a festival lineup and they're playing every other week or every week, who's going to be playing the Tivolis and the Memorial Auditoriums and the Signals and all that? So there's still a lot to figure out. At one point, I had heard, this was a couple months ago, that the numbers of acts that were sort of lined up in the queue on hold to play some venues, especially in bigger cities, was 7, 8, 9 deep. They all had hold dates. They were just that anxious to get out and start playing again. And so all that has to be figured out. You can only play one place at a night. So all that has to be figured out, and the multitude of all these festivals, what will it do to the venue? So the good news is, I keep saying, is it's now being talked about in ink and not pencil. You know, contracts are being signed, dates are being held, posters are being printed, tickets are being sold. So it's actually happening.
People who have not been on stage, they want to get on stage. People who have not been out, they want to get out and they want to see these acts.
Yeah, definitely. That's a curious point too. And going back to what we talked about earlier, the timing, it still pretty much feels like fall. I hear from a lot of bands that, yeah, we're anxious and we're ready to get out. But then I hear from a few that say, no, maybe the bass player, the singer's not ready, or the crew is not ready. So it's shifting now, but it's recently, a couple of weeks ago on our podcast, one of the guests that we had as a booking agent said she had actually had a band turn down 4 different offers for the next several weeks. They just weren't ready. It's a little bit of both. The vaccine really seems to have been the game changer. It's a tangible defense, it feels like, for a lot of people. You know what I mean? The mask, some people believe in it, some people don't. Even the ones who do, you know, would argue, well, I don't know what the guy next to me's done. So there was still that unknown. The vaccine gives people a little bit more faith, it seems like. That's what I'm hearing anyway.
Tell us more about the podcast these days.
Sure. Thanks for asking. It's called The What Podcast. I started it with a guy named Brad Steiner, who's a radio guy. He was here, and he's now down in New Orleans, where he runs a cluster of radio stations. We started it as almost a lark. We were going to Bonnaroo every year, loved it, realized that pretty much every time we got together, we talked about Bonnaroo, and figured probably other people do too. And then that year, 2016, was arguably their weakest lineup ever. And we thought, well, it'd be interesting to do a podcast, sort of a deep dive into the 70% of the acts we've never heard of. And found out pretty quickly that a lot of other people agreed, liked it a lot. Like I said, I think we thought we'd do 7-8 episodes, and it's become a year-round thing. We've got people from all over the country who listen, who have been on the show. And then about 2.5 months ago, out of nowhere, well, I know how it happened. We started getting industry guests, not just musical acts that were on the lineup or listeners. When especially the pandemic, I hate to say benefited us, but it kind of did, because it forced us to broaden our approach. It wasn't a festival. So we started getting entertainment attorneys, people who actually booked the festivals, people who booked bands. And the people at Consequence of Sound heard that one episode that we had with two people who are nationally, internationally known. I mean, they book big time acts. It was a really great show. They loved it and reached out and said, we think you'd be a good fit for our network. They have 9 other podcasts. So we're now part of the Consequence Podcast Network, which I say, you know, self-promotion, but also because I think it proves kind of the reason you and I are talking, is there's a lot of interest in festivals and live music. And Brad and I come at it. First of all, he's very good at radio. You know, I've newspapers for 30 something years. So we're both pretty good at interviewing bands and all that, but we're also huge fans of festivals. So it has that combination of inside baseball stuff and just plain fanboy stuff. And it seems to work. So it's going to be interesting. It means now we're doing it every week, and it means they want us to broaden beyond Bonnaroo. So we'll be doing probably attending 4 or 5 other festivals this summer and fall. Just basically letting people know why we like these festivals so much. That's pretty exciting.
And where can we find the podcast?
You can find it on consequence.net or thewhatpodcast.com. It's on every iTunes, all of them, iHeart, Anchor. Consequence is part of the Anchor system, I guess. So YouTube, we actually record. I don't know why. just stare at people talking, but it's a lot of people, that's where they find their music especially. So we're on all those platforms.
All right, Barry, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me, Ray. Always a pleasure.
Same here.